Hey everyone, what's going on? Welcome to a brand new edition of the Sam Bissell Podcast on the Ambiguous Podcast Solutions. And right now I'm here to bring you the latest and greatest going on around the world of Hollywood. Hope everyone is having a wonderful Tuesday so far. Hopefully everyone had a wonderful holiday weekend, whether you were celebrating Easter, Passover, whatever. Hopefully everybody enjoyed that and is kind of getting into the week on a high note. A lot of things that I want to talk about on the podcast today. We had a jam-packed weekend of things to discuss. Of course, I'm going to be going over everything that came out of Star Wars Celebration over in Europe this past week. I'm also going to be getting into the monster box office weekend that happened at movie theaters over the last 3 to 5 days or so. I'm also going to be getting into the brand new Marvel's trailer that came out today in one of the latest entries for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But the first thing that I want to get into today is something kind of groundbreaking that happened on Sunday night in the TV world. And we're going to go over to the podcast's TV corner of the show to kind of kick everything off. And of course, I'm going to start everything off with talking about this little HBO show that hit on Sunday night called Succession. Now, last week, I didn't talk about or recap episode 2 of this final season. And I wanted to kind of talk about both today, but really kind of get into the latest episode that came out on Sunday night, which is episode 3, which is titled Connor's Wedding. And to kind of kick everything off right now, I'm going to say up front, it's been a couple days, but I want to talk about it because I feel like I can't get into what I want to talk about without going into spoilers. So this is going to be a very heavy spoilers discussion on episode 3 of season 4 of Succession, which I never thought we'd have to do this for this show, but we are. So if you have not seen episode 3 of this season of Succession, Connor's Wedding, then this is your warning right now. I'm going to put in the comment section below of this podcast specifically the dates of when the time codes of if you haven't seen the episode yet, when to get out of it, and then when we're going to be talking about other things on the show. So here it is, spoiler discussion right now. You've been warned. This is going to be a full-on topic to spoiler talk on episode 3 of this season. And so here we go right now. So thinking about episode 2 and episode 3, I really like how the first two episodes have really kind of gotten us into a really good pace of the season. I think that the writing is still incredible. I think the characters are really well acted. The direction has been amazing. We've gotten our great Succession hits over the first two episodes. And I think going into this final season, you're wondering, where is this show going to go? How are they going to set up this final run? And they really kind of lay it all out there in the third episode. And really, just to get into it, Logan Roy dies in this episode. Episode 3 of Succession might be titled Connor's Wedding, but it might as well be titled The End of Logan Roy, because this episode we get to say kind of goodbye to Brian Cox in what has been a landmark character in TV over these last couple of years. And so to kind of just get into the gist of what I think about this episode overall, I think this is one of the finest hours of TV to come out in the last 10 years. I'm not even talking about the show. Just this one singular hour is one of the best I've ever seen in a long, long time. I think writing, direction, acting across the board was A-plus work. It was just absolutely phenomenal on every single level. And I just think as a viewer of watching this episode, it was just incredible to see this episode take a complete 180 and to go from something that it was in the beginning to something else entirely. It makes you kind of rework your entire brain of where we're going in this final stretch of episodes. And I think that just goes to show what television can do and what great television allows for you to do. And it got me kind of wondering about HBO, and specifically when it comes to event viewing TV. And Succession never really has been that in a way. Succession has always kind of been enjoyable, fun HBO enjoyment in TV watching where it has been on the level of a Game of Thrones or maybe even so much, say, as an episode of The Mandalorian or one of these other big shows that is must-see event-watching TV that because you don't want to be spoiled in that episode in that specific day. Now, this season of Mandalorian maybe hasn't been on that same reception, but if you look especially back a few years ago at season two, if you look back on the last couple seasons of Game of Thrones or even this season with House of the Dragon or even The Last of Us, Game of Thrones never really got to that level. It's got its audience and it has an audience that are general TV watchers, and then of course it has the corner that is lauded so by the critics whenever people get to watch the show and review them. So it has those corners on its side. But this specific episode, I think, finally elevated the show to must-watch TV, because even I was texting people saying, you have to watch this episode right now. If you don't want to get spoiled, you have to watch this right now. I even called up my brother. Literally, I said, unless you're doing something insanely important, because he's in college right now, so unless you're doing homework or studying for a test, I literally said to him on a call, stop what you're doing right now, drop it all, and watch this episode so you don't get spoiled. I even texted my dad that, because again, Succession has kind of been that enjoyable TV where you can watch it the next couple of days, and maybe if you're somebody who's an avid Succession watcher and you don't want to be spoiled, you watch it the night of, but you're not going to watch an episode and then say that you're going to get spoiled right away, unless it's the finale, which in this show so far, really it's the finales, specifically, well, really all three seasons, the finales have really kind of been the big game-changing moments that you might not want to get spoiled in, but nothing that has involved the haymaker like what Jesse Armstrong and his writing staff delivered for us on episode 3 of this season of Succession. And it just was able to invoke, I think, even though these characters are bigger than life and you might not be able to relate to them in certain ways, but in that moment in this episode when somebody as important as a father or a parent, significant other, passes away like that in just a sudden fashion, I think it really envelops a lot of human emotions and connections that you can somewhat relate to. And I think it was a great job from Mark Malloy, who was the director of this episode, to the writing staff, specifically Jesse Armstrong, who was the main writer on this episode, in delivering from the perspective of the children and giving us something that all of us can really kind of relate to. And I was somebody who was just at the very end shaking in my boots and needed to kind of process what I was watching for a second. And really seeing this episode also gave me perspective on about event watching with TV and specifically with HBO. And to kind of go into some sports terms a little bit, whenever we associate Sundays with watching something, viewing, watching, even though it's 6 months out of the year, typically the NFL rules Sundays from 1 o'clock to 8:20, 11 o'clock at midnight once Sunday Night Football is concluded. But there's another aspect of this, and I think this episode of Succession really brings it to the forefront, where you have great television on Netflix, Apple, Amazon, cable networks, but there's something about HBO Sunday night shows that are very, very special. And with all this TV that you're able to watch now on all these different formats, I think it brings more so to the forefront than ever that, sure, you have something that dominates Sundays that is an event, specifically the NFL, but another aspect that also dominates on Sunday nights alongside something like a Sunday Night Football is HBO television. Whether it's House of the Dragon, The Last of Us, The White Lotus, there's something for everybody, and somehow, some way, they're able to dominate the headlines every single time there is an episode of a show that's out there. And I think this episode of Succession is able to do that. And I think it really kind of brings into focus how an episode like this, a show like Succession, is truly once in a blue moon. And I think watching an episode like this, it really is something that's kind of special. And I was somebody who was caught onto something like Game of Thrones very later on in life. I didn't really watch it, or I wasn't really caught up to it until the end of season 6 going into season 7. So I kind of missed out on the shock and awe moments of the Ned Stark beheading or the Red Wedding. I never really saw those moments in real time, and I was somebody who never read the novels, so I didn't get that shock and awe value of seeing that for the very first time and the impact that had on those characters. And so seeing something like Logan Roy's death just come out of left field entirely, because I was somebody who predicted maybe in episode 5, episode 6, you get that death, because I think in order to live up to the name of Succession and see where these characters can go, at some point Logan Roy does need to pass on to see what these kids are like and what these characters are like without the main patriarchy behind it. And I think the fact that they were able to do it this early on, get away with it, and we still have 7 episodes to go. We're not even at the halfway mark of the season yet, because we have 10 episodes in this final run, and so episode 5 would mark the halfway point, and we're not even at that yet. We're 7 episodes left into this, and we have all this chaos that is going to ensue. And I think it brings up great conversation of where's the show going to go now? What are these characters going to do now that we have all this chaos ensuing? I think it drums up a lot of great theories, and I think Succession is going to elevate itself from just great, amazing television content on HBO to something that could become a water cooler, transcendent TV show over these final 7 episodes. And I think when we look back on all four seasons of this show, no matter what happens with the 7 episodes, unless they are able to top this somehow in the next 7 hours, I think this episode is going to be the defining moment for Succession. And I think if the final 7 episodes are able to deliver anywhere close to this and land a great ending for this show, this very well could go into the echelons of not just great modern era shows, which I think this episode catapulted to that level. I think it could be one of the great TV shows of all time, one of the great HBO shows of all time, going up there with the likes of The Wire and The Sopranos. I think it very much could go into that stratosphere if they're able to pull this off. And I just think what they were able to deliver on Sunday was just absolutely magical and amazing. And again, everything across the board was just phenomenal. I mean, there's nothing wrong, nothing even bad you can say about this episode. You can't even downgrade a part of this episode from A+ to an A. Everything across the board was A+ on this. What Mark Molloy was able to do in the directing aspect of this, and hearing what they did behind the scenes where on the yacht, when things are happening with Logan, all of that, even though it's splitting between stuff that's happening on the ground / sea on the boat, and then on the plane, even though that is kind of splicing itself, on the ground, everything's kind of happening in one continuous take pretty much, or they did a take like that where it's a 30-minute or so take of them just kind of going around, and since they were filming on film cameras, that they would have everybody kind of standing by, and after every 10 minutes or so, they had to replace one ammunition of a film canister with another one. It's just mind-blowing to hear how they were able to execute this, and it looks flawless. And so I think this episode alone deserves all the Emmys. I think if you were able to give out multiple Emmy awards for multiple acting categories, almost everybody should get some kind of win for what they were able to do just in this episode alone. I think Sarah Snook deserves an Emmy, Kieran Culkin deserves an Emmy, Brian Cox deserves an Emmy somehow, some way, McFadden. Everybody deserves accolades for what they were able to do with this episode. And so I just think it was one of the finest hours of TV that I've ever seen in my life. I think it's one of the great modern TV episodes of all time. I think it delivers one of the great twists of all time in terms of just coming out of left field, and you're expecting it to happen down the road in the show, but for it to just completely happen and not even be prepared for it, just in that moment as a viewer, was just absolutely insane. And I had my head, my hand on my head. It was just absolutely incredible. So my hat's off to everyone that worked on this episode of Succession. I'm very excited to see where they go from here. Now, if they're able to top it, I don't know how they're going to be able to do that, but I am excited to see where they can go from here. And I think the conversation about Succession and the buzz around it is going to be very interesting to see where it goes from here. Because if it can become that water cooler moment TV, I think this is going to be, it's just an unbelievable run of what it was has been able to do. And not a lot of TV shows have been able to do it. Again, you have select shows here and there, but for this show to actually kind of break through and do it like this in kind of the end of its run is incredible. And the fact that they were able to pull this off without anybody realizing what was going to happen, they were able to be as secretive as possible, is just a tip of the cap to them. And I'm excited to see where this goes from here. So what did you guys think about this episode of Succession? Were you as just shocked as I was, and as millions and millions of people were as they were watching this episode? Let me know what you think down below in the comment section, and let me know your thoughts. So if you're just joining us, once again, this is the ending of the Succession Season 4 Episode 3 spoiler conversation. So we're going past talking about Succession into some movie news that has been happening over the last couple of days. So we're going to be diving into that right now. We're going to kick it off with talking about the box office this past weekend, kind of recapping the major news that came out over the last weekend or so, specifically the five-day weekend. And since it is Easter weekend, usually that means that films could do better than anticipated at the box office over the weekend span, especially when you have spring break coming around right now, families are gathered together. Usually studios want to put some of their best stuff forward, and this weekend was no exception, as it was Easter weekend, and we got an incredible lineup of films that just absolutely dominated the landscape at the box office this weekend. So the first one that really just kind of blew heads, and we knew it was going to do great, but it somehow did even better than we had all anticipated it to do. And that, of course, is a Super Mario Brothers movie, which just cleaned up at the box office this weekend, just absolutely dominated, as over the three-day span, it made $146 million. And then over the five-day total, it grossed $204 million overall. And that would be from Wednesday when it was initially released to the Sunday date is when that five-day span occurs. So for Nintendo Illumination, this is a record-breaking win that sets a huge precedent, not just for animation, but also for a video game adaptation, which has been a very big talking point over the last couple of years. Specifically, it's become a bigger topic, I think, in the first half of 2023, specifically with something like The Last of Us coming out on HBO Max and being a very true, faithful adaptation to that video game, and also delivering huge ratings and kind of, again, like I was saying with Succession, being a water cooler television show that each weekend people are excited to go back to and talk about throughout leading into each and every single week's worth of episodes. And so I think for the Super Mario Brothers movie, it is very much so the conversation going back to the big screen. And we've had some films kind of come out and do okay or kind of falter. I mean, the Sonic the Hedgehog movies have done really well. The Detective Pikachu movie did okay for itself back in 2019, but I think people have been waiting for that big video game adaptation to come, and it comes in the form of Nintendo and Mario, Luigi, Bowser, Peach, and every single one that is involved in that universe. So with those numbers that I made both in the three-day and the five-day, it broke numerous records across the board. It is the number one video game adaptation opening of all time, more than doubling the previous record holder, which was Sonic the Hedgehog 2, which made $72.1 million over that span last year in 2022. Super Mario Brothers movie is also the number one video game adaptation domestically of all time, which again was held by Sonic the Hedgehog 2, which domestically grossed 190 $190.8 million. So just in the overall landscape alone, when you look at the worldwide total, or not, or the domestic total overall, it made $204 million domestically. So just in that span alone, it's beaten that in one weekend. And then when you look at kind of the more weekend overall numbers, the Super Mario Brothers film, which this is impressive in and of itself, is the biggest five-day opening of all time. And I'm not just talking about animation. I'm not just talking about video game adaptations. I'm talking about, think of any big film that has come out ever. It's beaten it. Live action, animation, video game. And specifically, the film that held that previous record holder came out in the summer of 2009, specifically in June, when it was the second film in the Transformers franchise, Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, which earned $200 million in June when it came out of 2009. So that is an impressive total for a film that held that record for well over a decade plus at this point. For a movie like this to do that is incredibly impressive. And then Super Mario Brothers is also the third biggest three-day opening for an animated film of all time with its $146 million. Its only two films above it is The Incredibles 2, which came from Pixar and Disney in 2018. That made $182 million at the box office its opening weekend. And then even though it is quote-unquote animation in the form, even though it had some, it's live action in the sense, but it is animation since it doesn't have any human elements, it is the 2019 remake of the animated classic in The Lion King, which made $191 million its opening weekend at the box office in July of that year, and it went on to gross around $1.6 billion in the 2019 movie market. And it is also, if you haven't really just gotten the gist of it already, it is right now the biggest opening of 2023, which is, again, no surprise whatsoever. And when you look at the overall numbers that this film grossed, it did also $170 million internationally. Specifically, when you look at its dates in Mexico, it made around $27 million, I believe, there alone, which is very impressive. And then worldwide, when you take in the domestic and international total, it's done $375 million worldwide at the box office. So this is a huge, huge debut for this movie, which, again, I don't think it's any surprise that this film did really well, but it's the fact that this film was able to do so well and exceed expectations. And we've only seen that happen a few times here and there throughout this kind of post-pandemic era of kind of Hollywood releases right now. And I think they had a lot of great things going for this one. I think the fact that this is, A, it's a Mario movie, and I think people are clamoring for this IP to be brought to the big screen in some kind of a fashion. I think animation was the smart way of going about that, because I think you will also get the family members and you get the big families. This can be a four-quadrant film for everyone to go see, so you get the family members, whether they have small kids, teenagers. You want to go see it with the family around Easter weekend. This is the film to go do it with. And then B, you also get the fans of Mario to go and see this overall in and of itself. So I think all those factors were working in favor of this film having a great opening. And I think when you look at the next couple of weekends, I don't think there's anything that's going to really hold it in competition. I mean, you have films like Renfield, which is coming out this upcoming weekend, and a couple of others, but really the next film, next big blockbuster to come out that's going to really challenge this film is going to be Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 when it kicks off the summer movie season in the first weekend of May. And so really, Super Mario Brothers has the full runway of April to just do insane damage at the box office. And I thought this would probably be the first billion-dollar film of the year. I'm more convinced of that, more so now than ever before. And I do think that this could maybe hit $1.5 billion, $1.6 billion, and be one of the highest-grossing films of 2023 and stay there at the very end of the year. This could still be in the top five, top three when all is said and done with all the big films that are coming out this year. So what Mario has been able to do is just outstanding. I think it just showcases overall for movies that if you make a film that people really want to go see, they will go see it. And this was one of those movies that even though it had a very bad, poor critic review on Rotten Tomatoes, this is very much a critic-proof movie because I think, again, people who want to go see this, I think even for me, I saw the film, wasn't that big of a fan of it, but I think people who are huge fans of Mario, who are kids that want to go see an animated movie, and again, there's not a big marketplace for animated movies right now, so this is going to have a lot of people going to see this over and over and over again. It hits on the nostalgia beats. It has some really great character moments in there as well that I think people will enjoy, and it's also at a nice 90-minute brisk pace, which I think will get people in and out, and you can have multiple showings for a film like this, which will reap the benefits for a lot of theater chains right now. So for Super Mario Brothers, this is a great start to their run. I think they're going to have tremendous legs over the next couple of weeks, and I wouldn't be going to be surprised if in the next, I would say, maybe 3 weeks or so, this film is going to cross the $1 billion threshold and have a really good run at the box office. So Super Mario Brothers was the big winner of this weekend. And then there were some smaller winners as well when you look at the bottom of the top 10 at the box office. And continuing on at the number two spot was the previous weekend holder about a few weeks ago. And that, of course, is John Wick Chapter 4, which grossed an additional $14.4 million at the box office. It now has $146 million. Domestically, $122 million internationally for a worldwide total of $268 million at the box office. So again, a 49% drop off, not too shabby, being able to kind of, I think, stick within that number two spot and not dip down to number three, four, or even more farther down the line, I think is a good sign that there are still people that want to clamor and go see this film. Even though it's a 3-hour film, and even though I said about Super Mario Brothers that 90 minutes to get people in and out, people, you can add more theater times. I think when you see a film like John Wick, you can fill up the theaters a lot more. And even though you're having less show times, people will still want to go out and see this movie. And for me, the two plus hour, almost three hour runtime, it goes by at a very fast pace. I think this is a high octane, high energy film. I think for a lot of action junkies that want to get their action taste, this is the one to go see. So I think it's going to still do really well for itself. It's on a really good track record right now. I think it'll become the highest grossing John Wick film in the franchise overall right now, and I think it's going to be able to maintain itself very well within the legs, because there's also nothing else quite like it coming out in April right now. I mean, sure, you have some films that might vie for that demographic that John Wick holds, but I don't think anything is going to be at the top quality that that movie serves at right now that people would kind of be dissuaded to not see it in. So I think John Wick Chapter 4 is going to do very well for itself. Another film that also did very well for itself that was kind of the kind of counter-programming, if you would, per se, for this past opening weekend alongside Super Mario Brothers was, of course, the Ben Affleck-directed film Air, which grossed $14.4 million at the box office and now has $20 million domestically, which it got over the five-day weekend. It also made $10 million internationally for a $30 million worldwide total so far at the box office. And another film that really exceeded expectations this week, and I'm really happy that it was able to do that. I did see Air, and I really thought it was a great film. It's my favorite of the year so far, and I think people are seeing that. I think the great reviews are really helping this one out. I think the fact that it deals with subject matter that people are really interested in, specifically talking about Michael Jordan and kind of how his brand became what it was, and then also having some great star power behind it. I mean, of course, Ben Affleck is the director, but he's also a supporting actor. You have both him and Matt Damon reuniting once again for this. You have Viola Davis, Jason Bateman, Chris Tucker. It's got a great A-list cast to go alongside of it, and it's got great reviews as a feel-good film, and I think, again, it's going to be great counter-programming for people that maybe they've seen all these other films that have come out over the last month. They don't want to go see Mario, but you have a film like this, it could feed people to go see it and get that kind of itch to go to the theaters experiencing a feel-good movie like Air is for a lot of people. And so it's great to kind of see that. And I also think it's a huge win in the fact that for Amazon, it continues their confidence that going the theatrical route before going to streaming is their best approach, where the reason that they're going to be putting in an influx of marketing capital into these films and going more so of the route of streaming of theatrical first, then streaming, is that people can see these films on the big screen. But let's say they want to wait a little bit or they hear great things about it, then that added anticipation and hype gets them ready to go watch this on Amazon Prime when they want to go watch it when it does come out. So they're able to get money right now and then add to that total once they're able to get the ancillaries for streaming, worldwide streaming distribution. So I think that is the smarter approach to go with. I think they went that way with Creed 3, and I think it's going to go that way here with Air for them as well. So I think this is a really good win. It still needs to make a little bit of money because I heard about the budget for this film before marketing and advertising. It was around a $70, $80 million budget, which even I gotta say is pretty big for a film like Air. I thought it would be more in like the 30, 40, maybe at max around the $50 million sphere. But to get it to $70, $80 million, I think they used their budget very well. But I was actually very shocked to hear that number for a film like Air. So it's gonna need to make a little bit more money before it's able to, I think, come into the positive net and get some kind of a gain for the studio. But I think they're hoping that maybe they don't get their money right now, but when it goes to streaming, that's where they're able to continue to recuperate some of that money in their investment in this movie. But I think this is a really good start for this film. And again, I think it's going to have very good legs moving forward in these next couple of weeks as well. Moving into the number four spot is a film that was last weekend's champion before Super Mario Brothers film kicked off the weekend after. And that, of course, was Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves, which grossed an additional $13 million at the box office and now has $61 million domestically, $61 million internationally, for a worldwide total of $123 million. And unfortunately, while I've been praising the first three films that are on this list, unfortunately, Dungeons & Dragons, I can't say the same for it. I think the 62% drop, which I've always said, if it's 60% or more, that's a very bad sign. If it's 60% or less, that's a very good sign for a film in its legs. Unfortunately, it seems like Dungeons & Dragons, while I had an okay weekend, I think a lot of people were banking on the fact that maybe in order for this film to have any kind of success financially and to have maybe any kind of potential franchise future, it would have to have really good legs moving forward. And unfortunately, I just don't think the legs are going to be there. And I don't think it's because of the film itself. I had a lot of fun with the film. It's been getting surprisingly really good reviews from the critics, from the people that have watched this film. They've really enjoyed it. I just think it's just bad timing, bad place, bad time. It was the fact that I think it was coming into a crowded marketplace already, specifically in the month of March, where you had films like Creed 3, Scream 6, you had John Wick Chapter 4. So even though it didn't do as well, you also had Shazam Fury of the Gods. So everyone had to kind of pick their poison for what film they really wanted to go see. And I think also the fact that now you have Super Mario Brothers coming in for the next couple of weeks, I just don't think it's going to have the screens in order to get to where it needs to get to. And I think it's just a big marketplace, a saturated marketplace at this time, which is good because you need that for theaters. I just think, unfortunately, for a film like D&D, if it came out a little bit later, maybe halfway through this month in April, kind of being that stopgap between Super Mario Brothers and the Guardians of the Galaxy, maybe it would have had a little bit more success. But to go before John Wick and to come after John Wick to go before Super Mario Brothers, it was going to be a potentially bad result for them. And I think the worst in the outcome is what we see in these numbers right now. So it's unfortunate. Maybe this film is able to get a second wind in the next couple of weeks, or maybe if it goes onto digital, DVD, streaming, maybe it's able to find a home there, and then maybe something is able to come from that. But unfortunately, I don't think that anything good is going to come out of the box office for D&D this time around. Because again, it's unfortunate because it's a really good film. People should go see it. It's just a lot of, I think people are prioritizing seeing other films right now over Dungeons and Dragons at this moment in time when making their selections and going to the theaters. Then rounding out the top five this weekend is Scream 6, which grossed an additional $3.4 million in the box office. It has now grossed $103 million domestically, $57 million internationally, for a worldwide total of $161 million at the box office. And this past weekend, another film that made a huge milestone was Scream 6. With its $103 million domestically, it is now the highest grossing installment moment in the franchise domestically of all time. So it beats out the original Scream, Scream 2, Scream 3, Scream 4, and the 2022 film that came out last year. So again, I think this just is further evidence that what Radio Silence has been able to do with this franchise, kind of reinvigorating it, has been for the better. I think people love the new cast members, the new scares, the twist, the new location really worked for this film. And I think it's got some good star power in it, especially with the recent rise of Jenna Ortega. And I think this film has been able to do a really good job. And the big question is going to be, does this film have enough juice to maybe surpass both Scream 1 and Scream 2 at the worldwide box office? And because right now those films have around $172 million, so it needs to make another 100 or so million to do it, or excuse me, another 10 million or so to do it. Is it going to be able to do that? I don't know. We'll see what happens. But I think this is still a great result nonetheless. The fact that it was able to surpass last year's Scream film, which made around $138 million worldwide at the box office, and now this one made over $161 million, showcases that people really like the response for this one, and that you want to see an increased improvement in each of your franchise films. You don't have to do gangbusters every time. You don't need to do Super Mario Brothers kind of numbers to do really well at the box office. If you're able to outdo yourself with each franchise, it showcases that people are interested and they like what you're doing. And so I'm hoping that I wouldn't be shocked even if in the next couple of months we get some potential announcement that we're getting a Scream 7 in the next couple of years. Whether we get it in the next year, 2 years, I think it is going to be inevitable at this point, given these really good results for Scream 6. Then moving into the bottom half of the top 10, coming in at number 6 is His Only Son, which grossed an additional $2.8 million at the box office and now has $10 million domestically, $4,000 internationally for a worldwide total of $10.6 million at the box office. Coming in at number 10 is Creed 3, which made an additional $2.7 million at the box office and now has $153.2 million domestically, $113 million internationally for a worldwide total of $267 million worldwide. Coming in at number 8 is the DC film Shazam Fury of the Gods, which grossed an additional $1.5 million at the box office and now has $56 million domestically, an international tally of $71 million for a worldwide total of $127 million at the box office. And then coming in at the final two spots at number 9 is 1001, which grossed an additional $599,000 and now has $2.9 million at the box office. That includes domestic and worldwide, since it has not been released in international markets right now. And then coming in at number 10 to round out the box office this weekend is the new Owen Wilson film Paint, which grossed grossed $570,000 at the box office, and that is also its worldwide tally, since it did not also come in international markets as well. So that does it for the top 10 this past weekend. Again, going from 10 to 1 to kind of recap it once again. Number 10 was Paint. Number 9 was 1001. Number 8 was Shazam Fury of the Gods. Number 7 was Creed 3. Number 6 was His Only Son. Number 5 was Scream 6. Number 4 was Dungeons and Dragons Honor Among Thieves. Number 3 was Air. Number 2 was John Wick Chapter 4. And coming in at number 1 this weekend was a record-breaking Nintendo Illumination film, The Super Mario Brothers Movie. So what do you guys think about these box office results this past weekend? Are you excited and happy to see the kind of record numbers that Super Mario Brothers film is doing? Let me know what you think down below and leave your thoughts. Now to move on from the box office to the other big thing that happened this weekend. It happened across the pond in the European markets, and that, of course, is the celebration that takes place in honor of a galaxy far, far away, and that, of course, is Star Wars Celebration, where basically over the last 4 days over the weekend, from Friday to Monday, basically, everyone in Europe who are big Star Wars fans gathered at a convention center to kind of honor and celebrate everything amazing about the Star Wars universe, whether it be movies, TV, comics, books, animation, gaming, you name it. They were talking about it, kind of delivering amazing, exciting, brand new details about everything that is coming in the future of Star Wars. And since I didn't have a podcast on Friday, I wanted to kind of recap and talk about some of the kind of big key things that they talked about in terms of the future of the Star Wars franchise, specifically when it came to their TV slate and also what seems to be the formations of some kind of movie slate that we'll be getting and hopefully the next couple of years. So really kind of Friday was the big day for major announcements coming out of A Galaxy Far, Far Away, where that when it came to learning new details about new seasons of TV, new TV shows overall, new movies. A lot of that happened at the Lucasfilm Studio Showcase on Friday. And that's where we got a lot of big announcements for the movies. So to kind of give a recap of what came with these films, and we've been hearing a lot of rumors about a Damon Lindelof film with Charmaine Okoye-Shinoy, who is going to be the director for one of those films. Damon Lindelof left. He put in a draft. Him and his writers put in a draft for the film, and we don't know what's going to happen with that film. There was rumors about Dave Filoni getting a potential Star Wars film down the line, and so we finally got some clarity on all of these things as Kathleen Kennedy kind of came out and kind of gave, I think, what was a very impressive timeline of things to come in the movie verse of the Star Wars universe. And she also put out a really good timeline for the different sects of the Star Wars timeline, whether it's the Fall of the Jedi, which is kind of the prequel trilogy, the Reign of the Empire, which is kind of Andor and Rebels and the video games. And of course, you have the Age of the Rebellion, which is the original trilogy. Then, of course, you have the Rise of the First Order, which is the sequel trilogy, the New Republic, which is very much kind of the Mando universe right now. And then we also got the selection of some newer past times and future times that we're going to be getting in the Star Wars universe. And so Kathleen Kennedy announced that we are going to be getting a movie set within the earliest times that we could go back to in the Star Wars universe, and is going to be dealing with the dawn of the Jedi. And it is going to be apparently directed and confirmed to be directed by the one and only James Mangold, who very much said that this is going to be kind of like the Star Wars version of a big biblical epic in the vein of a Ben-Hur or a Ten Commandments. And I really like that. I think that if you want to learn more about the Jedi and the Force, this is the way to do it. And I think hearing that James Mangold was announced to do this, I think showcases the confidence that Lucasfilm has that, I guess, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny came out as best as they expected it to do, and they liked working with him, and so they wanted to include him moving from the Indiana Jones franchise into the Star Wars universe, and they wanted to continue the relationship with him. So that gives a lot of good confidence in that movie, which we'll talk about towards the end of this recap. So I was excited to hear that. I think it was a great surprise, because I don't think anybody really kind of picked up on James Mangold returning to the Star Wars universe. It was rumored years ago, before we got any of these kind of shows and movies now, that Mangold was in talks to do a Book of Boba, or not a Book of Boba Fett, but a Boba Fett movie. And nothing really happened with that film. They kind of scrapped it and then kind of remolded it to become the TV show that was Book of Boba Fett. But for Mangold to be coming back in, I think is a great sign of confidence that they like working with him. They like what he did on the fifth Indiana Jones film. And then the rumors did come true when Kathleen Kennedy did announce that Dave Filoni will be making his own directorial debut in live action in terms of feature film, with a film that is going to be centering around the culminating events of what he and Jon Favreau and all these creators have been doing in this kind of Mandalorian or / Mandoverse that has been going on right now. So all these shows, Mandalorian, Boba Fett, Skeleton Crew, Ahsoka, all that is going to be kind of coming to fruition in this kind of big climactic epic film that seems like that we're going to be getting, that Dave Filoni is going to be doing, which excites me. I think that's the right film for him to do. It seems like it's going to be featuring a lot of characters that he has kind of brought in from animation to live action that he created alongside Jon Favreau in The Mandalorian. So I think that is the right film for him, and I think that's the one that's going to get most people excited for what's to come on the film slate. The one that gets me very excited, actually, and it's because I love her as a character and as an actress. It was great to hear this news. Alongside James Mangold, it was probably the biggest surprise announcement to come. And even though you could kind of maybe see early on that there was potential writings on the wall, it was great to have that confirmation. And it was the fact that for Charmaine Okoye-Shinoy's film that she's going to be directing is going to be in a post-sequel trilogy era. So these films are going to be set in the past, present, and future, and this one is going to be 15 years after the events of The Rise of Skywalker, and it's going to be seeing the formation of rebuilding the Jedi Order, and the person that's going to be leading that rebuild is none other than Rey herself, Daisy Ridley. It was great to see her on stage. I'm happy to see her kind of get another shot at Star Wars, hopefully in a better way than maybe she got in that sequel trilogy. So maybe she's able to do something really well with this. And I'm hoping this movie is able to actually come out and do really well. And again, I really liked all these announcements that came for the movies. It's just a matter of, are they actually going to happen? Is James Mangold actually going to make this film? Is this Sharmeena Bachanoi film actually going to happen? Because there's already been some turbulence. Even though they have a new writer in Steven Knight, they lost their initial creators in this with Damon Lindelof and his writer. So are they kind of reformatting this movie right now? What's it going to be? So that's kind of up in the air. The only one that probably has any solidified chance of probably happening is this Dave Filoni film, because Dave Filoni is pretty much Star Wars. Whenever you think of him, when you don't think of George Lucas, you really do think of Dave Filoni, and he's kind of embedded all the way with Star Wars. So this film is probably going to get done, especially since it is going to be culminating a lot of these events that are happening with these shows, which are very much happening on Disney Plus right now. I think it's probably the most likely to get going out of the three, and the one that I have more confidence in right now to actually get done. And then speaking on the TV side of things, there are actually some really cool things that I think came out on the TV side of the panel that gets me really excited for what's to come. We got confirmation that Andor Season 2 will be coming out in the window of August 2024. They're about halfway through production right now, according to their showrunner, Tony Gilroy, who said that they're probably going to be shooting up until August of this summer, and then they need about a year or so for post-production. So that window of 2024 of August sounds like the best-case scenario for that final second season to come out, which I'm really excited about. It sounds like they had some really cool new footage to show that they've been shooting over the last couple of months that sounded really exciting. I'm a huge fan of this show. I love that in the first day at Star Wars Celebration, they had a whole panel kind of dedicated towards the making of the first season of Andor, and it shows that for a lot of fans, they dressed up in that kind of prison outfit from the first season. They were chanting One Way Out. It was really good to see that show does have its fans, sect of fans within the Star Wars universe, and that I'm excited to see what they're going to do for the second season. But the one that got me really, really excited, and it's the one that I think I'm most anticipating out of all these shows right now, it's The Acolyte. And we finally got new details in regards to what this show is going to be about. We didn't get any new teaser footage that was shown to the public. That was only saved for the people that were at Celebration, and it sounded like the footage was awesome. But Leslie Headland, who is the showrunner of this new show for Star Wars, she was the creator of Russian Doll. It sounds like this sounds really, really cool. And from the initial pitch that she made to Kathleen Kennedy, which she said it was kind of Frozen meets Kill Bill, which when you first hear that is strange, but when you hear her kind of explain it, it makes, I think, a lot of sense in the way that I think it's going to be dealing with these sisters and their struggle, the light and the dark, mixed in with kind of the martial arts expertise of a Kill Bill. That, to me, is fascinating, so I'm really interested in that. I loved her kind of confirming and of what initially the show was going to be, which was going to be investigating the dark side. And when talking about this, it sounds like very much so that the bad guys are going to be the underdogs in this film. And the way that she was saying it and explaining it kind of got me thinking that pretty much that every single one of the pieces in Star Wars, it's really the good guys that have been kind of the underdogs, and the bad guys have been the favorites. They've been the ones that have been in power. So in this new age of the High Republic, where there's peace and prosperity and the Jedi are kind of in full bloom at this point and the Sith are nowhere to be found, it's going to be very interesting to see that dynamic switch and see this new era in Star Wars that we really truly have not seen before. And the fact that it was that Leslie Helen said that because there's no really kind of true war within the Acolyte, because it's taking place during the High Republic, that you don't really have any kind of war stuff to be inspired by, any kind of spy material like Andor is inspired by. Very much so that Leslie Helen was inspired by the martial arts films that inspired George Lucas, which is pretty much Akira Kurosawa films and the late samurai films of that time period. So it sounds like very much so this is going to be a very Jedi heavy, lightsaber heavy show, and I'm very excited about that. It's going to be set in a new age, a new time period where it's new characters. I'm very, very interested to see where this goes. I'm hoping that we get a trailer soon for everyone to see, because it sounded awesome, but I really liked what we heard about this one. So this got me the most excited for the new shows that are coming out that I'm really, really excited to see about. And then kind of to kind of wrap it up in terms of the Star Wars content, they really kind of went into a lot of the Mandoverse stuff. They talked about Mando Season 3. They showed Episode 7 to a lot of people that were there, and it sounded really cool. Hopefully they're able to wrap it all up in a nice way in these final two episodes, which they were kind of talking about a little bit. Then they also kind of introduced everyone to the other Star Wars show that is going to be in the Mandoverse, and that is Skeleton Crew, which is going to be starring Jude Law. And they also introduced some of the kids that are going to be in the show, because it has that kind of Amblin Goonies vibe, which kind of makes sense since Kathleen Kennedy is from that house producing a lot of Steven Spielberg's films back in the day. She very much knows that kind of tone and where that show can go. So it seems like that's where they're going to be moving alongside of it. They also did announce the directors that are going to be a part of this show, and it was confirmed that John Watts, who is one of the creators on this show, is one of his ideas, is in the director's chair. You also have David Lowery, who of course did a Ghost Story. He's doing the upcoming Disney film Peter Pan and Wendy. So they were able to retain him. It was announced earlier that the Daniels were doing an episode, so that was reconfirming that directing spot. Jake Schrader was another one that was previously reported to be making an episode. You also have Bryce Dallas Howard returning to direct an episode of Skeleton Crew, or however many she's going to be doing. And then Lee Isaac Chung, who did the third episode of this season of Mandalorian, which I actually quite enjoyed and really liked. I thought he did a great job with that episode. He is going to be doing an episode of Skeleton Crew. So you have a mix of experienced Star Wars figures, directors who have worked within this universe so far, and then some newcomers that I'm actually excited to see what they're going to do. The one that really does excite me of the newcomers here is David Lowery. As much as I think people are going to be interested to see what the Daniels do, I'm a huge fan of David Lowery. Ghost Story is one of my favorite films when it came out a few years ago. I really enjoyed Peach Dragon. It's one of my favorite Disney live-action adaptations. And I'm excited to see what he's going to do with Peter Pan and Wendy. So that's the one that I'm really looking forward to seeing from this lineup of Star Wars directors, both old and new, that we've seen. And again, Bryce Dallas Howard, even though this past episode of Mandalorian was a bit of a stumble, I don't really necessarily blame it all on her, but her other episodes are just so great that I'm willing to overlook this one episode, because the previous three episodes that she did have been some of the best Star Wars episodes in Mandalorian and Book of Boba Fett in their arsenal. So I'm very excited to see what she's going to be doing on Skeleton Crew and what she's going to be revealing for this. And then some of the footage that was showcased at Star Wars Celebration kind of confirmed that whoever Jude Law is playing is going to be some kind of Jedi, and that Academy Award nominee from Banshees of Inisherin, Carrie Condon, is going to be appearing in this show in some capacity. We don't know who or what she's playing, but according to the footage that was screened, she is a part of the show in some capacity. So this is one to me that's a little bit more up in the air. We didn't get a full release date for this show, and I also should mention that for The Acolyte, it is coming out in 2024, so we do have two shows confirmed for next year in Andor Season 2 and The Acolyte. Skeleton Crew, it's kind of rumored that it could happen either end of this year, beginning of next year, kind of a Book of Boba Fett situation. We'll see, but they did not give a release date for this one yet right now. From what I hear, I think this is still in production in some sense. It's in post-production / production reshoots in a way, so I think this one still has a little ways to go before we actually see it on Disney Plus. And then I think the one that people have been talking about the last couple of days, and it's the big one, it was kind of the big Star Wars trailer to come out this weekend, and that is the trailer for Ahsoka, which is going to be debuting sometime in August of this year. And there were a lot of great things that were talked about in the Lucasfilm showcase. And then also there was a specific panel designated for the Ahsoka show early morning on Saturday this past weekend. So there was a lot of information given about this show. It's been confirmed that Mary Elizabeth Winstead will be playing the live action version of Hera, who is a beloved character in the Star Wars Rebels arsenal. It was also confirmed that Lars Mikkelsen will be bringing the character of Thrawn to live action. Diana Elise Inarritu, who was debuted as Morgan Elizabeth in season 2 of The Mandalorian in the Jedi episode, which introduced a live action version of Ahsoka Tano, who's played by Rosario Dawson. She will be back in this show. Rae Stevenson and Ivana Sakano will be playing these kind of, it seems like, acolyte force users in a way that we'll be seeing. They looked awesome. And it was also revealed that the directors for the show will be Dave Filoni, Steph Green, who directed an episode, two episodes, one for Boba Fett and one for this past season of Mandalorian, Peter Ramsey, who did what I think is my favorite episode of season 3 so far, in episode 5. He is coming back for Ahsoka. Then you have some newcomers like Jennifer Getzinger and Geeta Patel, who are going to be joining the Star Wars universe and directing episodes of Ahsoka. And then, of course, you also have one of the executive producers of Mandalorian, who is also a director on the shows, which is Rick Famuyiwa, who is going to be directing, I don't know how many episodes of Ahsoka, but at least is going to be director for this show. So again, kind of like with Skeleton Crew, a great mix of old and new directors. So you get some familiarity, you get some new voices in there, and I like how they're able to divvy that up as well. Kevin Kiner, who did the Clone Wars Rebel themes and scores for those shows, which, again, David Filoni is very much a part of, is going to be returning to score this show. And then, of course, the big thing was the actual trailer that debuted. And Celebration did get an extended trailer, but from the stuff that came out online, it looks awesome. I think Hera and Sabine look amazing in live action. Rae Stevenson as a Force user villain looks like a badass. I love the kind of the orange tinted lightsaber that they're getting. I think it's really cool. They did name drop Heir of the Empire when it seems like Thrawn is kind of being labeled as this heir to Palpatine. And if you're somebody who's a fan of kind of the legends, the extended universe, Heir of the Empire is a very big time book that kind of introduced the world of Zahn for Thrawn from Timothy Zahn. So for people that are a big fan of the books, that was a big name drop. And the action looks incredible. I mean, for people that want lightsaber fights and Jedi action sequences and more Jedi, I think if you want to watch that, you're going to get that a lot with this show and Ahsoka and with The Acolyte when it comes out next year. But Rosario Dawson looks awesome. She really truly does look like an Ahsoka come to life in a way that when you look at the animated show, when you look at Clone Wars and Rebels, and you look at Rosario Dawson as Ahsoka, you believe that that is a much older, mature, wiser version of Ahsoka Tano that we followed throughout the many years and shows and stories that she's been a part of. And I'm very excited to see where this is going to go. It looks awesome, and we'll see how it all fares out. But I really did enjoy what they bought with all of that Ahsoka information. And then the final thing that came from the Lucasfilm panel has nothing to do with Star Wars, but it's their big film coming out this year, and that is Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. And they did debut a new poster and trailer. The trailer itself looks awesome, looks epic. It has a great Indiana Jones feel to it. I just loved everything about it. I love the mixture of the classic Indiana Jones feel with some great music choices in there as well that fit that time period. The poster for Indiana Jones is probably one of my favorite posters to come up this year. It has that classic Indiana Jones vibe with the previous posters from Raiders of the Lost Ark, Temple of Doom, Last Crusade. It has that feeling to it, and it looks great. I mean, this seems like it's going to be a potentially worthy send-off for Harrison Ford as the man with the fedora hat. And Phoebe Waller-Bridge looks awesome. Excited to see kind of, again, her tap into something different for herself, where we know her to be a great writer, a great comedian. She's done shows like Fleabag. She's been a showrunner for shows like Killing Eve. But to see her do something like this, where she's just acting, but she's a big part in a big film like this, I'm very, very, very excited to see what they're going to do with her. Mads Mikkelsen looks awesome as the villain. The CGI, I got to say, it seems like they're much more confident in showcasing multiple different shots of that sequence in here, and that it seems like the de-aging, the CGI is working for it right now, and I'm excited to see how that kind of comes together. And it just looks great. And again, they must have a lot of confidence in this film. They're willing to both, A, give James Mangold the Star Wars film, wanting to work with him again in A Galaxy Far, Far Away, and also the fact that they want to debut the film at the Cannes Film Festival. And again, films can falter at film festivals. We've seen that a bunch. But if you want a world premiere that at a prestigious festival like Cannes, and you want to make your first impression that festival, you got to be able to know that you have the goods to deliver that, and they must have confidence that they have the goods to deliver in that festival and for a lot of people to go see it and get that early reaction a month or so before it hits theaters on June 30th. So I really enjoyed the Indiana Jones trailer. I also enjoyed everything that came from Star Wars Celebration. I was trying to follow it as best as I can. It looked like a lot of fun. Maybe one day, when I'm pressed one day, I'm able to get a press badge to go there. I would love to cover it. It'd be great. But it just looks like a lot of fun. It seems like there really is a bigger universe for Star Wars fans. And sure, we have fans here in the state, but it was, I think, great to see that while we have a lot of Star Wars fans here in the U.S., it's a worldwide brand, and that there are people internationally that are Star Wars fans. And you saw that, I think, here at this past weekend at Star Wars Celebration, and it was awesome to see. And I think they delivered a lot on the goods for news and for announcements that got people excited, not just for the immediate future of Star Wars, but for the future of Star Wars. And I think, again, there's great television shows to look forward to, and hopefully there's some great movies to look forward to. Again, hopefully in the next couple of years, we actually get one of these films to come out. If I had to rank them, probably think Filoni's is probably as sure of a bet as we'll get because he's so embedded within Star Wars and Lucasfilm. He's worked with them. That one seems to be like a good bet. The other one would probably be James Mangold. And then I'm hoping this new film, this post-sequel film with Daisy Ridley happens, because again, I want to see Daisy Ridley back in Star Wars. I know a lot of people don't like the character, but I'm somebody who fell in love with her in The Force Awakens, and then I feel like they did a really good job with her in The Last Jedi. I know that's controversial to say, but I do like what they did. And then I felt like they kind of faltered it at the very ending, giving her not a great satisfying conclusion. So I'm hoping that we continue from what we got in the sequel trilogy, story directions or not, whether you agree with them or disagree with them, and that we go on a new journey with her as Rey Skywalker and see her rebuild the Jedi Order and follow her on this new journey 15 years later. So I'm hoping we get something really interesting with that film, and we'll see where it goes from here. But overall, I think this was a great weekend for Star Wars, and I think it gets people excited for what's to come in the future. What did you guys think about Star Wars Celebration? Let me know what you think down below and leave your thoughts. And the final thing that I want to talk about on the podcast today is to talk about another franchise that might need a little bit of a shakeup here and there, and that, of course, is the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And, of course, we have Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 coming in the month of May. We have Secret Invasion coming out in June, but there's one more film that is set to come out later this year, and that is for The Marvels, which is directed by Nia DaCosta. It's starring Brie Larson. Once again, it's Captain Marvel teaming up with Iman Vellani, who was Kamala Khan in the Ms. Marvel show, and then, of course, Tiana Parrish as Monica Rambeau, who was first seen as the adult version of this with Tiana Parrish in WandaVision. Of course, Samuel L. Jackson is back, and so I was excited for this film. I should actually say interested. I was very interested in this film. But then Ms. Marvel came out last year, and I fell in love with the character of Kamala Khan. And so that got me even more excited for this film, knowing that she was going to be a part of it, and then that she was going to, I think, infuse this great energy that kind of corner of the universe really needed. And watching the trailer today leaves no doubt that this is going to very much be, even though it's the Marvels and they're all going to get their equal footing, I think this is going to be the Kamala Khan show once again, because she just steals every single minute that she is in this trailer, or even not even a minute, every single second that she is in this teaser trailer, she just kills it in. And I love the fun love style in this one. It does have a lighter tone. It's kind of weird because Samuel Jackson is going to be back as Nick Fury, and we just had the Secret Invasion trailer a few weeks ago, and so it'd kind of go from that, which seems like a dark, dreary, spy, espionage kind of conspiracy thriller, to go from that to this, which very much kind of is going to the vein of space, opera, fun, enjoyment, is kind of weird, but I trust Marvel to kind of go between genres and tones and do what they do. But overall, this seems like a really fun, enjoyable movie. I like the playful tone of it. I think the dynamic between all the characters looks really good. The chemistry between Brie Larson, Iman Vellani, Tiana Parrish all together, the inner workings seem to be really good. Again, I think Iman Vellani is going to be the next superstar in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and I think getting her on the big screen as quick as possible is a smart thing to do. The VFX, which has been a big point of conversation over the last month and a half, ever since Ant-Man came out and Victoria Alonso's exit, they look good so far in here. We're going to have to see more of the film to get a better gist, but definitely I have more confidence in the VFX in this film than I even did in Ant-Man when I saw that trailer for the first time. I think it's a good mixture that we're getting in this trailer right now, where it seems like it's more footing on Earth and space and different planets. I'm getting a better vibe in that sense. The music in the background of this trailer look good. So I think they have a potential hit on their hands. And I think people forget that Captain Marvel actually made over $1 billion at the box office. Now, the question becomes, is that because of Captain Marvel? Was that because this Captain Marvel, the first film in 2019, was the film right before Avengers Endgame came out a month or so later? And so I'm very curious to see how this is all going to come together. I think also I'm hoping that this film can do a little bit of a better job in interweaving the TV and the movie universes together this time around, because I feel like Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness dropped the ball a little bit when it came to Wanda. I loved Wanda's character in it, but I feel like it was a little too, you had to see WandaVision to get where some of this was going. I'm hoping with, it's a good seamless transition of knowing Kamala Khan, and for people that maybe didn't see Ms. Marvel, they get a sense of who she is in this film, or introduced to her, kind of reintroduced to her a little bit in this movie. And then if you want to go back and see Ms. Marvel and get her kind of origin story, you're able to do that. So I'm very curious to see how they're going to do that with this movie. But I think going from July to November with this one was smart. I think it's a good idea to have three films over the span of a year. I think having Guardians let that dominate the summer is a good idea, and then let this one dominate the Thanksgiving, Christmas, holiday corridor is the smart approach to go with. And I think this one could do very well at the box office. I think this one's gonna depend on reviews, word of mouth, and fan enthusiasm at that time for this film, because we're gonna have a few more things come before the Marvels do. We're gonna have Guardians, which I think it will do very well. Secret Invasion is gonna be a big test, and I think before the Marvels come out, I think Loki is gonna come out towards the end of the summer into the fall season. So I think the Marvels is gonna be the last thing Marvel cooks up for us in 2023, but there are some things that could either go for it or maybe potentially go against it. And so we'll see where all that lands. But in terms of just this trailer alone, I think it was a good starting off point for the marketing. It sets the tone, sees where these characters are, who these characters are, where they are at this particular moment in time. And I'm very excited to see where all that is going to be going as well, as the Marvels is coming out on November 10th of this year. So what did you guys think of the first teaser trailer for the Marvels? Let me know what you think down below and leave your thoughts. And with that down and out of the way, that will do it for this edition of the Sam Bissell Podcast. Once again, everyone, thank you so much for tuning in. Be sure to check out my channel for more content. You can check me out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Radio Public, SoundCloud, and much more. Also, make sure to tune in on to the Ambiguous Podcast Solutions. And be sure to check out the other amazing shows that are on here, such as You Mad Bro, the number one source of what the internet is pissed off about on a weekly basis. Also, check out Goal Driven Professionals, geared toward improving client relations, return on investment, and customer acquisition costs for independent businesses and services. Also, make sure to check out The Daily Grind, a weekly motivational podcast with Kelly Johnson, giving you everyday tips and key takeaways on reaching your goals. Also, along the way, make sure to check out these other amazing shows on the podcast solutions, such as WrestleMania Podcast, Wrestle Attic Radio, and Midnight Show. You can check these out and so much more on the website, AmbiguousPodcastSolutions.com, also on Facebook and Twitter at Real Ambiguous. And if you want to check out Canopy Treehouse, use the coupon code Ambiguous. Also, when you get a chance, make sure to follow me on social media. Find me on Twitter at Bissell Samuel, that's BUSSELLSAMUEL, and also on Facebook at Sam Bissell. Once again, everyone, thank you so much for tuning in, and until next time, keep on screening.